He's ridden zombie T-Rexes.
Ended wars against vampires.
Fought demons alongside angelic defenders.
Died just a little bit to get out of a less than ideal job contract.
And robbed Hades, both the god and the location.
But now, Harry Dresden has to deal with some of the most stressful situations life has to offer. Family.
Today, we're talking about the latest Dresden Files book, a novel that is finally titled appropriately to the subject matter, Peace Talks.
This is the 16th book in the series that is rapidly approaching a conclusion. If you have not read any of them, you really should, you filthy animal.
If you want just a refresher, you can go back to our Season 1, Episode 15, that we talked about our favorite Dresden Files books.
Otherwise, stay tuned for our very spoiler-filled review of Peace Talks.
So this episode ended up being quite a bit shorter than we intended because of some technical difficulties. So I have included a couple clips from the very first episode where we talked about the Dresden Files, which is episode 15 of season 1, entitled You Don't Know How Old I Age. If you want to skip over these little clips talking about how much we loved it then, you can go to about the 4-minute mark and start this episode. Thanks.
But no, this was this was the first special episode that was your suggestion. You wanted to do one that was all on the Dresden Files.
Heck yeah, I did.
Yeah. And who was the first person to recommend the Dresden Files to you?
It was you back in college. I read the first book of the Dresden Files. I did not like it even a little bit. So I put it down and I didn't touch the Dresden Files again until this year. Then I read every single other book in the series in like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I started, I think I started with book like 8 or 9.
Yeah, you read them way out of order.
I really did, but I think that is actually the reason I was able to make it through it. Because I started with book whatever I did. I read through those. I was really excited to read the rest of them. And then I went and, got on a Reddit thread, figured out where I was supposed to start, and even Jim Butcher, the author of the books, says don't pick up any of my books until book 3 because the first two are garbage.
No, that's fair. Like I went back and tried to make myself a cheat sheet to see what every book was about so that we could do this episode, and I then color-coded it to see who the main bad guys were, and the first two books are just blank because
they're just there to kind of catch your attention.
Yeah, it sets the stage for some, my whole thing about not liking deep mythology that you have to understand for the whole series is probably a big portion of like because of this series. There is, from the first book, even if it's not very good, even if the author doesn't think it's very good, from the first book you can tell there is a very well crafted, very in-depth world that has been built, and that there are very clear rules, and that the author isn't going to break them. And you can tell that from like the first two chapters of the first book. And over the course of 15, you slowly figure these out organically. There's never a moment where somebody sits down with a dictionary or in a classroom like other urban fantasies do most of the time. They use that format because it's easy and explain the rules of the world to you.
I hesitate to say genius level, but it's close. This is the book report. Shut up.
Okay. We're definitely going to come back to the intro music with you just saying shut up so angrily.
I hope so.
All right, you want to read the book condom for Peace Talks?
Sure. When the supernatural nations of the world meet up to negotiate an end to ongoing hostilities, Harry Dresden, Chicago's only professional wizard, joins the White Council's security team to make sure the talks stay civil. But can he succeed when dark political manipulations threaten the very existence of Chicago and all he holds dear? Tune in next time on the Wild Adventures of Harry Dresden.
It might just be that the subject matter is very noir, but it does sound very much like a radio play intro.
Yes. Yes, it really, really does. So not to jump into criticisms, but I have felt this way for a long time. I feel like these books have completely forgotten that Harry Dresden is a detective.
That's true. He
did not. That was really disappointing because that was like one of the things I really liked in the first couple of books.
And
loved
he's not
it.
Really a detective anymore. Loved. He's definitely not a private eye anymore.
No.
But,
and that kind of ruins his character, IMO, because the hard-boiled detective is a really cool trope. And then you throw a wizard on top of
and
it.
You had such an opportunity in this book because his brother was set up for – or set up to – blackmailed into – we don't know. We literally do not know why.
We don't know.
And
don't
he
know.
Didn't detect. He should have been
he should
detecting.
Have detected.
What
and it would have been even awesome because you could have had like the whole – and then this long-legged dame walked in with eyes, the colorist. Like with Laura, Thomas's sister.
It should have been
– it would have been awesome.
It would have been so amazing, and maybe we'll get it in the next book, but it would have been so amazing if this was his return to detective novels when his brother is threatened because his brother did commit some crime and he has to figure out why and who's behind it. But no, that was like – push to the backside for all this peace talk stuff.
I think Jim Butcher gave up. He was like, nope, we're just a fantasy novel now.
Yeah, which is okay. That's kind of how the trend has been going. But I wanted some more detective novel in this, especially
I almost disagree because the genre of the Dresden Files is urban fantasy. But for several books now, there hasn't been a lot of urban in it. It's been held almost exclusively in the fantasy realms.
And I feel like this book definitely set it up. The next one is going to be a knockdown dragout in the streets of Chicago in a blackout. And I think that was the intention that we're trying to get back to a very focused narrative. He just had to do all these side things to set it up because he knows how he wants to end it. And he said that for several books. But this one just felt like it was a kind of a missed opportunity in a lot of ways. Because I feel like, and this is my big criticism, and I'm going to stick to that the whole time, I feel like this book was a Marvel movie. It was all about setting up the next thing, and it didn't really care to be self-coherent.
Yeah. No, I had issues with this book. I thought that it was a little slow in parts. The entire novel was a setup for the next couple novels, and it felt like it, which I'm not a huge fan of. I didn't feel like it was very self-contained. I thought that it was a little too maudlin in a lot of spots.
It did a lot of things really, really well that I'll get into later. It did a lot of things really, really well, but it failed to like have the things that made it a Dresden Files book. Like it just failed to meet that standard, I felt like.
It was a very sappy book. It was almost
like the first half of a novel.
It was a meditation on the transition from bachelor to fatherhood.
Yeah.
It was weird.
And we got that already in the last couple books. We got him finally acknowledging his child and all of these things. And this one was kind of he's being a really good dad. And I have that in my notes several times that was the most endearing this book ever got when he was being just like a daddy to
sort of. I
it
almost
so, I loved it, but I needed more. Like I needed that to impact the overall plot and not just be this weird asides every now and then. Like
I didn't think he was that great of a dad. Spoilers. He was in the room with his daughter for one scene. His daughter started making pancakes, and then he was like, go to your room so I can fight with your grandpa. And then we really didn't see the daughter again.
Well, we had a couple. We didn't really – he went back to her.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I feel like his character changed too much for the amount of screen time his daughter was in the story.
It was like he had to try to be a good dad, which is good. Like show that character, show him having to try because it's not natural to him. But then have that directly impact the rest of the story, and it didn't. It never like got to that point. I felt like.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But luckily, this is the first of two books we're getting this year. We're getting the next one in October. So we should get the conclusion to all of the storylines that were set up and not paid off in this book in what's it called? Battle Lines, which will be here on October. Mm-hmm. So we have that to look forward to at least. But yeah, we've kind of, I feel like we don't really need to go off this structure. It might take the episode too long. But before we get into one of our favorites or disfavorite things, I wanted to make this really cool aside because the day after I finished this book, I saw this video, or maybe it was the day after I started the book. Either way, Overly Sarcastic Productions, a YouTube channel I follow, put out a video on, they do miscellaneous myths, they do recaps of famous myths and famous historians and stuff, and they did one on the Book of Invasions, which is the closest thing to a primary text we have of Irish mythology, and it's where the Fomor come from. So, yeah, so the last several books, the Fomor have been this sort of weird, kind of mysterious bad guy that comes from the ocean that we keep hearing about, but they don't really have a standard description, and they're not really well known, and you don't really know what they can do or what they want. And it's because they are an ancient Irish supernatural race that we actually, in real life, know almost nothing about the mythology of. They're mentioned multiple times in this Book of Invasions, but this is the only primary text of Irish mythology we have because Ireland was Christianized really early in their culture. So they didn't have a chance to write down some of their pre-Christian myths. So this was well after, like 600 years or so after Christendom came. And the text itself, like, loops back on itself, is contradictory, and it has no chronological sense. But the Fomor are mentioned in two of the five or six big invasions. And in one, they are the invading force, this evil entity that came from underground or the ocean. It's not clear which. And then, like, 200 years later within the chronology, not even 200 years, like the very next book in the Book of Invasions, they're intermarrying with the kings and queens of Ireland and producing children and stuff. And they're all,
I mean, who didn't? Am I right?
And it's just very unclear what they are, but they are creatures that either come from the ocean or go back to the ocean and or live underground. It's kind of like, you know how Norse mythology, a lot of it mirrors Christianity, but we have the original stories that we can tell what's pre-Christendom, what's post-Christendom.
Sort of. Most of Norse mythology was written after Christianity.
Yeah, took most over of the, it was.
Like, well, 90% of it.
But we have a few original texts that we can suss some of that out. There's no original text in Ireland, so you can't even really figure this out. But because of that, it makes these creatures in particular and some other things they talk about in those books so much more interesting and very useful to Butcher, because he can make a very alien, unknown villain, because we don't know enough about the stories. He's been folding in Greek and Roman mythology and Norse mythology a lot. We kind of know those characters really well, so they're not scary to us. We know how their stories end and begin. The Fomor, we don't know anything about them. So it's a very good, scary villain. And I'll link to that video in Instagram and Twitter when we post this episode. But yeah, that was an aside I wanted to make because I thought it was so cool that it came out at the same time.
Nice. Well, I always think stuff like that is interesting. I think it's very interesting when you can find those old mythologies that are I don't know what the word for it would be, but basically created after the religion itself has almost died out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost a posthumous religion.
Yeah. It's so far removed from the people who believed it that it's hard to know. Yeah. It's just very interesting.
And that's why Viking mythology is very interesting to me, because it's very similar in a way. Like, a lot of the Viking myths and things like that weren't codified until well after the Christianization of Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. So you have this religious belief, like what we think of as Norse mythology, postdates Christianity. And most of the myths were written by Christian monks who were trying to kind of record the Norse beliefs. So you do have like the system of posthumous religion. And it's always very interesting to see something like that, where you have a religion that is both dead and being created after its death.
Yeah.
So I always think, like, that's a really interesting idea to explore, especially in fiction.
Yeah. The Greek and Roman religions were practiced as they were written, and they got muddied because of, like, the telephone effect over time. Things just kind of got slowly got changed. Mm-hmm. The Irish and Norse and even the, like, Britons, the cultures and religions of those were written so far removed from the fact that they're inherently muddied. We don't know where a lot of stuff came from. So it was really interesting to watch that. Yeah.
So what were your favorite parts
back
of the
on
book?
Dresden Files.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically part of Dresden Files. It's all real world mythology. So what was your favorite part of the book?
My favorite part of the book was the fact that potions came back, I believe.
Yes.
I've wanted, and it was two potions that we've seen used before. So the fact that they were used again, and they didn't go through the process of explaining it to us, but once those scenes started, you're like, oh yeah, I remember how this works, and it made you call back to other moments that were really interesting in the series, and it just made that whole those couple scenes really, really interesting. Because it was both a callback and a new use for potions we've seen before, and we haven't had potions in so long. So I think that was my favorite part of the series or the book.
Very nice.
If you, I would say, and I know you don't, you disagree, the interactions with his daughter had me like kind of swooning each time. It was just so endearing and sweet to me. They were so limited though, that can't really be my favorite part.
Okay.
How about you? What was your favorite part?
So this is the biggest spoiler of the episode. So if you have not read to the very, very, very end of the book, just tune out for the next 2 minutes. My favorite part of the book was the end. I really, really liked how Harry basically confined his brother to a horrible fate where if Harry does not win, his brother is screwed. And then he also had to face down against his ally of the entire book. I really liked that. That was a yeah. good ending.
That was
I didn't really like this book, but I liked the ending of it.
Okay. I had a couple of little likes that weren't my favorite scenes, but a couple of the things I really liked that I wrote down here. Two of them were him being a father, trying to be a good one. I think the best.
You might be missing something in your life there, bud.
Probably. The best of Dresden has always been his, when he has these national emotional outbursts, and they're always because of family, like the Chichen Itza scene, the time when his like girlfriend even showed up, when he learned he was a father. All those are like the best scenes, but now instead of running from it, he's just straight up owning it, and he will pause in the middle of something and go talk to his daughter for a bit and then get back to the story. The fact that it's a pause takes you out of the book and it weirds it up, but I like that they're doing something new with this character finally.
Yeah.
Just a couple little bitty things that made me smile as I was reading it. When he interacted with who's now the Winter Lady, is that her title?
Yes.
Yeah. When his former Padawan, it's only really one scene, but it's still like they immediately fall into their old relationship despite their massive power differences and stuff. And it felt so real. But it left me wanting so much more. I was just like, give me more of their interaction.
That was good.
So much fun. Like, he's like talking to her like she's the person who learned from him, but now she's this globe-trotting, super powerful being that is technically his boss. And yet he still trained her in everything she knows. And it's just, I don't know, it was a really cute scene. And then, of course, when he touches Lara, the White Queen, and it burns her. And it's just like physical evidence that what him and Murphy have are true love. I liked that. I liked when that happened.
I guess I also liked the scene where Queen Mab gets like destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
She's been this unbreakable goddess for every single book. And suddenly she isn't perfect. And that was pretty cool.
But that's something else. I thought that was really good that they're sticking with this, the primordial. Real gods or the old gods are literally bigger than life, which is something that happens a couple times in other fantasy texts, that the older gods are actually too large. And we've now seen that with both Hades and this Titan again, massive spoilers. We've now seen that for both of them, and I like that they're sticking with that, that she is huge, just like Hades was. That made me a little bit happy.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, you said you didn't like this book, so I feel like you probably have some big changes you would have made. I have one that almost infuriates me every time I think about it, but what do you got?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, I thought it was a little too sappy, a little too maudlin at times. And then my biggest issue with it is that Jim Butcher spends a lot of time recapping, which is fine. Mm-hmm. He does it in most of his books, which is helpful if you haven't read the books before. I thought he went a little overboard on this one. And I thought the stuff that he decided to recap wasn't that central to the story. And then anytime a quote unquote bad guy showed up, he would always describe them as monsters and not refer to like which monster it was. And mm-hmm. if you have gotten to this point in the series, you should be on the ride. Like you should know what's going on. So I appreciate him recapping a little bit, but I think he did way too much of it. And it just felt like it took up too much of the story. And so the story just didn't really feel like it ever got started. And I understand it's an intro to the next book, but it was just too much like getting the car revved up.
This felt like, and I feel like it could have been the Summer Island Players episode of Avatar. The penultimate episode where you recap everything you came before. So you're good. You're fresh on all the characters that are going to play into the, I think he said it was like a 3 or 5 book arc. That was the final arc of the whole story. But instead it just kept being dragged down by that. Instead of it being one of the best episodes that Avatar ever made. And it just was basically a clip show. And that was a little bit annoying. Agreed. You should have just, he did it well at times. When he did the dragon stare down, that was interesting. When he did the bring back the potions and you do the gray potion thing again, that was interesting. When he had the two living knights of the sword like sparring, that was like all those those were interesting, and they were basically just recaps of what happened before, but there was something new added to them each time. And the rest of the time it was just like, oh hey, remember this one vampire chick you haven't heard of in 6 books? Well, she's back. That's all. Moving on. And it was just that kind of thing that was like, that was not helpful. And that was just way too obvious. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. It was a mess.
Okay. This is the one. Differently. This literally angers me every time I think about it. But the whole last 2 books led up to this amazing moment where his brain split open. And this is like actually like a 5 book arc, but like it ended last book. His brain split open. He gave birth to this magic brain spirit baby, Alexa ripoff, stuck her in a new skull, and we got a single scene with her, and they used her to make pancakes, and that was it. Yeah. And we didn't even get Bob to juxtapose with. We never saw Bob in this book. I was so mad about that. Bob is one of my favorite characters.
That was completely garbage. Yeah. It was such a waste of a really cool story arc, because that character was – almost a second main character in a lot of the other books, because it's Harry fighting against this seductive power and he conquers it, and then it's a babysitter.
Yeah. And then like, and Bob was the second primary character for a lot of those books, and this person, this creature was going to replace him and set it up as a replacement to him, and we got a single scene with her. I was so annoyed. I was like, give me more of this magic brain baby Alexa.
Honestly, it seems the way that character's been set up, it seems like it's not going to be important in the next couple of books either.
Yeah, I don't see how they're
going to pull her in. Because it's underpowered. It's like, oh, it's a juvenile thing, so it can't really...
Yeah, it's like it knows learning. Everything, but if the child is... Yeah, it's very annoying.
Yeah, not good.
Well, hopefully they'll find a way to use her, because I want to see that thing used. It's so exciting to me.
I agree.
The other... I feel like this is a small change, but it would have been so much better, is the big fight for this book, or one of the 2 big fights in this book, is Dresden and his grandpa versus outsiders, versus these like corner hound outsider things.
Yeah.
that was totally superfluous. We knew the Outsiders are a big threat. We understand how big of a threat they are. You've made that a huge point. However, right. We haven't seen an actual fight with the Foamer in a long time, and they're already confusing and mysterious enough that we don't know enough about them. If you would have just changed that from being corner hounds to being some creature of the Foamer, because the peace talks hadn't started, and they could have had plausible deniability that could have tied into the story a little bit better, and it would have reminded us of how scary the Foamer are. But instead, this whole thing was used to show how badass Grandpa is. But A, you've shown us that for 15 books. We know how badass
Grandpa is.
No
one ever doubted that Ebenezer was like the OG.
Yes. Like
ever.
I think he felt he needed that to set up the duel between the two of them by the end of the book, but it was not necessary. I know how powerful he is. Not needed. Yeah.
Like, it would have, in my opinion, been more poignant if we would have been left a little more in the dark, and then you get to the very last battle between him and Dresden, and then suddenly it's like Dresden going up against him, and we're like, this will be easy. It's Harry Dresden.
He always lucks out, and it's like, crap. Oh, wait, no, this dude is flying on a mountain and throwing comments around. Dresden can't do that.
That would have been, I think, a little more – I think it would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or at least it would have, like, hit me a little harder instead of, oh, great, another cool wizard battle where a badass wizard is fighting it.
Just made Harry get cornered by some Foamer and have that be the big fight in the middle of the book instead of this weird.
Exactly.
Like, I know he needed to point out that Dresden was one of these 600-year special things that explains why he has mental acuity in all these situations where nobody else would.
I forgot how much I hated that.
It was cool. Like,
thanks for reminding me of it.
You could have explained that like 6 books ago and just reminded us of that in this book instead of telling us that now. And or you could have at that point done a bigger emphasis of why this is why you can resist the White Court.
Not gonna lie, I hated that storyline because I would just like to remind you that Harry Dresden is an orphan who grew up on a farm in Missouri. So he's literally an orphan farm boy who is destined to save the world. Like
that.
It's so tropey.
And it kind of undermines some of the cool tropey
in the earlier books. And then the fact that they're like, oh, also you were born under a special astrological sign. So you're like super special. Come on, seriously.
It shows that his one big ability, the reason he's lucked out all these times, is because he has like, +2 against psychic, like basically.
Yeah. It's just like 100%.
Which explains how he did all these really impressive feats, like resisting these things. But the whole point of him being interesting is he could just do this as a regular human. He had enough strength of will to resist these things.
Exactly. Nope. See, the it's thing that style. I always found. He was always a very compelling character because he seemed very upright in moral character and like he just had a will that was indomitable. And by giving him superpowers, it undermines a lot of that.
Yeah, it's a little annoying. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you have any favorite quotes? Once again, I looked through my Kindle and found that I had saved a couple quotes from the book.
I don't. I'm not very good at remembering quotes. I'm sorry.
It's fine. I only remember it if it's a Kindle book I read, because then I highlight them as I read them. But this quote, I think you'll appreciate. It's talking about when his daughter was making pancakes, and it said she focused on the work with instant morning energy that can be possessed only by someone who has not yet discovered the immutable necessity of coffee. And I was like, preach.
There it is.
Children have way too much energy in the morning. Preach.
I agree. It's obscene.
Yeah, it's gross. Just don't do that. Do you have any other? I don't know why I put them in this order, but in this quote, I put these two brilliant scenes. I don't think necessarily they're my favorite, but I think they were just extremely well done. Like they were well written. And one was the big battle with Ebenezer. And it was the doppelganger twist. It was obvious if you've read the books and are paying attention that the superpowered ring his Padawan gave him wasn't going to be a blast ring or fire magic or anything that he would do. It was going to be what she was good at and some kind of masterful illusion. that was obvious. However, yep. the way they played it off and the way he went into that chapter talking about his relationship with his father and misdirection, and then the author, Butcher, used misdirection on you to make that happen while he was using misdirection in the story to make that happen. Like, it was really, really, really well done, even if you yeah. saw it coming for a while. That was – I was very impressed by that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It was really good.
And then the other one, which is just one of my favorite things every time it happens, and you can help me remember the word, is that when he's – because he's the warden of the magic prison, and so whenever he's on the island, he knows it's innocuous – what is that word?
Well, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, nope. He knows everything. Like, he knows everything about the island when he's on there. Yeah, but it's like specific omniscient. It's there's a word for it that he says a couple times.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't know.
Okay, well, whatever. Dresden as the island god is always so epic, and when it plays out in this book after he's completely drained because he pulled this doppelganger twist on his grandpa, and he just had to do one of the most gut-wrenching things in the world and lock his brother in an inescapable prison and make him face all the fear and pain he's caused to somebody else. And then he gets attacked and is just like, nope, don't have time for this shit. And just like owns the situation because he's on his island where he's God. It was awesome. Brilliantly executed scene.
I did appreciate that. It was a nice way to use that special power.
Yeah. And they've done it every time he's gone to that island. It's happened in some way. And this time I think it was the most like fully realized.
I thought it was the best version of it. Because so, every other time, it's been like, I know everything on this island. Oh, shit, the bad guys are owning me. What?
Yeah, he knows where they are, and that's the gist of it. And this one is like, no, I know where they are, and I'm fucking using it. Like, just, boom, yeah, you're in the hole. It was a much
better realization.
Boom. Yeah, it was really, really fun. And then that, like, little bit at the end, when they go back to the boat, and injured Murphy, like, had her gun drawn on them the whole time. So even if he didn't do it, like, he was, yeah. It was just the characters are so well established at this point. Like, I think it's easy for him to write these books because he knows what his characters would do in every situation because he's had them for 16 books.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So you get really brilliant little scenes like that where they do something amazing that is so them because he knows them. They're real to him at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, so this book ended with him on a boat back to blacked out Chicago right before this massive Fomor invasion led by a Titan with a mystical weapon of mass destruction, and the entire signatories to the Unseelie Accords are there and helping him fight back this invasion. And he has, what does he have, the Spear of Longitis and the Shroud of Turan? Is that what he's got with him? Yeah. Going into this battle. What do you think's happening next? Do you have any big predictions?
Oh, geez. I don't even... I have the personality where I resist making predictions because I want to be surprised. I like these books because they try to have a twist ending, and I like the twist. I don't want to know the twist before it occurs.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of what the opposite. What do
you think? I know you are. That's why I'm interested to see what you think.
I absolutely know. I don't know if it's going to be the next book or the book after, but I know that Hades is going to come back and lay the smackdown on this Titan.
I hope so.
It has, because Hades and the other children of the Titans defeated them the first time around, and they made it a big point at the end of that book that him and Hades were kind of chums because Hades sees himself in Dresden. Like, it's got it. He's going to go back to hell. Somehow he might even try to summon Hades, which is always fun when he summons somebody way too powerful for him. Like, something's gonna happen and Hades is gonna duke it out with a Titan in Chicago or something in this next book, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't actually want that to happen. If there's gonna be a big bad who fights the big bad, I want it to be Vatarung, the guy who is Odin in disguise.
Odin and Santa Claus. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like that. That would be a very cool. I would like that.
That would be fun. I would like to watch that. I remember, and that would be if Odin, I mean, Odin's already come back in as the big, the Deus Ex Machina a couple times in the story so far. But if he comes back into the end to do something like that, that would be good as well, because it would be very cyclical with the very first book when he's explaining summoning to you, and he talks about how technically you could summon Santa Claus, although I don't even want to imagine how powerful that man would be.
That'd be nuts.
And then it like revealed, like, I don't know, 10 books later that he meets Santa Claus, or he meets this guy who happens to be Odin, and then also happens to be – yeah. It would be fun if that they put drawback on that.
That's what I would want. But that's pretty much it.
Well, I have I think we're probably going to get something. And this is one of the things – like, I don't know if I want this or not, but I think we're going to get magic revealed to humans by the end to some degree.
I would appreciate that. That would be cool. I would like that.
You would like it. See, I don't think I would.
I would like
I've only seen one book do that in a way I liked. And so unless it's the very ending and you don't really see what happens afterwards, I don't think I'd be okay with it for the Dresden Files. Yeah. I like that it being still a separate world.
Fair enough.
I think it's hard to pull off. The only time I saw that doing really well was Libriomancer, that series. I did an episode on that a while back, but that series did that very well, the reveal to humanity. I don't feel like it'd be done well in the Dresden universe.
Okay.
I don't think it would work very well.
All right.
But that's it. That's my thoughts on that.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Well, sorry if this was a short episode. I actually have no idea how long it was because
that's okay. I have a hard out. I got to get going. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming. We'll have one more episode this season, and then we don't know when we'll be back for season 3, but we will be. Follow us at Twitter @book_pod, Facebook @BookReportPodcast, and Instagram @TheBookReportPod. And you can email suggestions or topics or just to chat @BookReportPod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening.
Bye, losers.
Bye.